The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
About Brundage drops him with the counter right.
I've been working really, really, really hard, man. People say I'm a grappler or a wrestler, man. I'm just a winner.
Cody Brundage!
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous!
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Matt and I today are going to be joined by Cody Brundage and also a buddy of mine who I have not talked to in a while, Tom Arnold, making his first appearance. I think Cody is coming in relatively shortly, so we will get started with Cody. He's fighting Rodolfo Vieira. Saturday night. That's a great card and a great fight. You want a fight I'm looking forward to on that one too? De Lima against Cortez Acosta, Waldo Cortez Acosta. I'm really looking forward to that. I love those big heavyweights. And I really enjoy watching Marcos Rogério de Lima fight.
You love those big burly men.
I do. They're fun to watch. And I like a good heavyweight, second fight up, middle of the card. They are the second fight. Yeah, Song Yadong against Ricky Simon is the main event. And that is this Saturday. Main card starts at 7 o'clock, 4:30, ESPN2, ESPN Plus are the prelims. Cody is in the waiting room, so let's bring Cody right on. I like
let's do that, man.
Who's prompt. Very nice.
Let's do that, man. I'm so excited. Cody, how are you?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having
buddy.
Me.
How you doing?
Nice to meet you, man. It's your first time on here.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I'm finally making it, man.
Fuck yeah.
See, that's just most people feel like this is the end of their career, so we're happy that you have a...
Hey, I heard you're a slight underdog with this fight, but you've always been the underdog from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, every fight in the UFC, I've been an underdog, so it's just It's good. I feel like I should make my friends some money. If they were to bet, I don't think they will, but if they were to bet.
Now, does it bother you? Does it bother you when you're the underdog, or do you not care?
I don't really care because I feel like the people that are making the odds, they don't know what I'm doing. They don't know what my opponent's doing, right? It's just kind of like, especially in MMA, it's not like football. Like football, the better team's going to win 9 out of 10 times. In MMA, like maybe the better guy wins 60% of the time. So I don't feel like. I feel like you're kind of just your guess is you're just guessing. It's not really like you have a great idea of who's going to win. So it doesn't bother me too much.
Very hard to pick fights. I mean, because there's so many ways for guys to win and lose. I mean, it's just submissions. There's the occasional body blow, the occasional leg strikes that end a fight. That's very rare, but I happen to like it. Or, of course, just getting knocked out or outpointed. There's a lot of ways to lose a fight and a lot of things you don't see coming. So I do typically pretty poorly at picking fights.
I also like being an underdog because I feel like the bigger underdog you are, if you go and do something cool, you have a better chance to get a bonus. So I don't mind being an underdog.
Dude, shit, man. I made my whole life about being an underdog. Listen, you're fighting Rodolfo Vieira, and, people look at him, and they might be like, fuck, man, I can't get taken down. His jiu-jitsu. Dude, come on, man. People have been trying to pin you since you're a kid. You've been wrestling for a long time. So you're looking at this like, dude, I'm not jiu-jitsu. I'm not. You know what happens when you punch a black belt in his face? He becomes a fucking brown belt. Fucking elbow him again, he becomes a purple belt. That's what you're thinking, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely thinking, like, it's going to be on my terms. I'll dictate where the fight takes place. And I'm not afraid. Like, I'm not going to be afraid to take him to the ground either. You know, I feel like I've wrestled, like you said, I've wrestled my whole life. I'm a black belt in wrestling. So I'm like, you know, it is what it is. I have confidence. And I feel like as long as I dictate and am intelligent with the way I do it, that, you know, that's a route to victory for me as well. So, yeah, I saw a stat the other day. It was like, Rodolfo Vieira has 100% takedown defense. I'm like, that's because everybody's a pussy and won't take him down. I'll take his ass down. I don't care.
Right. And you're interesting, too, your family, because you were raised, I think your mom was a biathlete, I read, and your dad special forces. Yeah. What is a biathlete? What you do, obviously, there's a third one you don't do. Which one doesn't a biathlete do?
So the biathlete is cross-country skiing and then shooting.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's different. Shooting as in a skeet shooting or?
Rifle, it's a target shooting. And then, like, based off how you shoot, like, if you miss the target, you have to do extra laps. So if you're a really good shot and a slower skier, like, my mom wasn't the fastest skier, but she was a really good shot. So she would save herself time on the course with her shooting and then beat maybe some of the faster skiers.
Wait, I'm confused here. Yeah. No. We're combining skiing and shooting. Where are you from, Goody? What am I?
My mom's from Vermont. I'm from South Carolina.
Long Island.
Yeah, my mom's from Vermont. My dad's from Buffalo. So I got two Yankee parents. They moved down to South Carolina, and then that's where I was born. So I didn't do any of the skiing. I didn't do any of the hockey or anything that they grew up doing. But you know, they found their niche in there, I guess.
Why they moved to South or North Carolina?
Well, my dad got stationed at Fort Bragg. He was with the 82nd Airborne. And then when he got out, which was like right before I was born, he got out and went to medical school in South Carolina, became a physical therapist. So that's kind of where they ended up. And then I was just, you know, I didn't get any say in the matter. That's just where I was.
Jimmy, I just want to clear this up for myself. Sure. So you're skiing with a rifle on your back.
Right? A 22 rifle on your back. You're skiing. You go shoot your targets and then continue to ski.
Who the fuck thought this up? Were they high? Who's going up? Yo, man, you know what would be fun when we're skiing? Let's get a fucking rifle and start shooting shit. Jimmy, it sounds a little nutty.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds crazy to me, too. That's why you won't catch me doing it.
Yeah. It's great.
So wait, when you're 82nd Airborne, is that Army Rangers?
No, he wasn't a Ranger. He was 82nd Airborne. He's in the Pathfinders, which is like a different special forces organization. So, but yeah, similar. I mean, he was a jump master. So he taught Rangers to jump. That's actually how he met my mom. My mom was in the armed forces as well. She was a photographer on jumps. And so she was on the planes with him taking the pictures.
And jumping too, or just on the taking pictures as she was going. So your parents are pretty like type A personality people.
Yeah. It's probably why they didn't work out.
Oh, they split up. Okay.
Yeah, they split up when I was super young. They both remarried. My step parents are awesome. So it was probably for the best.
But did that make you feel pressure? Like, okay. Or is that just in your DNA? Or like, I always wonder when someone grows up with parents that are both active or both really like kind of doers, does that make you feel a pressure to do it?
I don't know if I ever felt a pressure to do it. I just wanted to, you know, it was never like I need to do it because they do it. It's just like, I feel like I've always wanted to. I had four brothers and a sister growing up. My sister played college soccer. One of my brothers plays college lacrosse. Like, we just grew up in a super athletic and like be doers type family. So, I just feel like it came naturally. It wasn't anything that I had to force or felt like I had to do it. It's just something I wanted to do.
Oh, okay. And how do they feel about you fighting? They must be happy.
Well, at first they weren't as happy, right? Like, I didn't tell anyone when I took my first amateur fight. I didn't tell anyone. I posted a picture, I think, on my social media of like a face off. And my dad called me. He's like, "Hey, what the hell are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm in Ohio right now." He's like, "Yeah, but what the fuck are you doing?" I'm like, "Well, I'm fighting this dude tonight." And he's like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm gonna get in a fist fight." And they were kind of like, "Bro, you went to college. Like, you have degrees. You have a lot of options you could do. Why are you doing this?" And they're like, "How much are you getting paid?" And as an amateur, I'm like, "So I made $0. They're like, "You're going to go fight this dude for free. That's going to be your life." And then, like, when you tell them, like, "Well, I'm going to make it to the UFC," it's kind of like when you're a little kid and you're like, "I'm going to be an NFL player." And they're like, "No, you're not. What's your backup plan?" And you're like, "Yeah, what's your backup plan?" I'm like, "I'm be an NBA player." So, like, it definitely was a little bit of that for a while, but then when I made it, you know, they're all on board. They're my biggest fans. So It definitely was some hesitation at first.
Now, your wife's a fighter, and she was a finalist on The Ultimate Fighter. Now, did you meet her through training, or?
Yeah, so funny story. I used to coach college wrestling, and I would go up to the gym in the morning and just hit the bag that she was at, and I was terrible. I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I was just a wrestler. She came up to me one time. She's like, you know, you're not very good at this. You don't know what you're doing. And in my mind, I'm like, I didn't know who she was. I was like, you're a 115-pound girl. What the hell do you know? Like, I'd probably kick your ass. And then I figured out who she was. And she was, she comes from a boxing background. So she became like my first kind of coach. And she would always say, she's like, you're going to make it big. And when you do, you're going to owe me 2%. And then I married her and now she takes everything. So it worked out. Yeah, it worked out pretty well for her, I think.
Yeah, that's what happens when you get married. You forget having anything that is yours.
For real. And then you have kids and it's even more, right? Like, I don't have anything that's mine.
What were your degrees in? What did you go to college for?
So I was a triple major in secondary education, history, and English.
Now, is secondary education, what is that? Is that
high school.
So did you want to be a teacher?
Yeah, I was going to be a teacher and a coach. I don't know how much I wanted to be a teacher. I always wanted to be a coach. And, you know, education wasn't a super difficult degree, I'll say. Like, it was fun and I enjoyed it. But I didn't feel like I had to, like, I was wrestling in college, so I feel like I could balance pretty well. And like I said, I wanted to coach anyway. So I was like, this is the way I'm going to get into that field. And then I found fighting and was like, okay, I'm going to do this, which is maybe like the opposite of teaching. So, it worked out.
What do you think makes somebody a good coach? Like, to you, what makes somebody a coach that you, cause everyone responds differently to being either yelled at or talked to a certain way. What do you think makes someone a good coach?
Some things I think make a really good coach are like, my coach, for instance, you know, he's on the mat with us every day. He would never ask me to do something that he's not willing to do. So like, if he asked me to do something, I know he's done it or he's doing it. Like if we have a team run, he's running on the team run. If we have a team lift, he's lifting with the team. If we're rolling jiu-jitsu, he's rolling. So I feel like, just kind of being in the trenches with your guys, you earn a lot of respect. And then I also think, you know, realizing that the sport is very important, having success in the sport is important, but kind of trying to shape people for life and set people up to be good people. You know, you'll get good athletes if you have good people. So if you can put an emphasis on having good people who are genuine and are trying to leave a good legacy, I feel like that's huge to being a good coach.
Right.
That's big right there. That's a word. I like Jimmy.
Are you patient enough to be a good coach?
Me?
No. Okay. I already know you are.
So when I was young, I used to coach, nothing will test your patience like, coaching youth sports. And when I was in college, I would go back to, cause I went to college like an hour from where I grew up and I would go coach, youth wrestling. And I think then it was tough, like, cause I was young and I think I maybe didn't have the most patience, but I think now I have a little bit more patience. And I also think it's like finding the group of people you're going to coach. Like some people are really good kids coaches. Like they're built to be really good kids coaches. I'm not a great kids coach, but like older guys, I do a really good job with like guys that I can kind of be a little tougher with, but also, you know, understand that and they can take that and deal with it. I feel like I do a better job with.
Yeah. That's funny, man. Personally, like I got three daughters. I didn't start teaching the kids class until my kids were in the kids class. And now I'm in there a bunch because, yeah, I guess you just know how to deal with kids better when you have kids.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I feel like I could do kids now since I have kids. Like I definitely feel like having kids grows your patience and just being older and having a little bit more experience, I think definitely grows your patience. But when I was younger, it was tough for sure.
How many kids do you have?
I have one daughter and then another one on the way in July.
Yep. Oh, okay. And your daughter is how old?
She just turned 2 in February.
Oh, wow. So it's close. 2 and I guess 1. So what is she should be like almost three years older.
Yeah. Like 2.5 years older. So there'll be, my house will definitely be a little wild for a little bit, but it'll be good. I'm excited.
You do it close together. That way you don't have to go through that again. You know,
That's what my wife said. She's like, I want her to have a friend and I want her to have somebody that's close enough in age that they can play and kind of grow up together, do some of the same shit. I'm like, yeah, okay. You're the one that has to carry her for 9 months. So whatever you want.
Yeah. And get all the diapers and stuff out of the way within like one block of time. Like you don't want to get out of it and all of a sudden have to go back in a diaper. Like that just seems like it would suck.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely trying to, I think this will be our last talking, but who knows? Like, women are insane. Like, they, my wife, she's the best. I love her, but she's like, this is the last time I'm doing this. I'm like, well, you're 7 months pregnant, so we'll see what you say in a year and a half.
Yeah. Would you be okay with another one, or are you done with two?
I always tell my wife, I'm like, I want as many kids as we can afford. So right now we're going to be at -2, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah. I've always been, I've never been inclined to do it. And Matt has three kids, and it always just terrifies me. I just, like, it's so much responsibility, and like, I can't afford to lose my job because a kid won't eat. Like, it just scares the shit out of me.
Oh yeah. It's definitely changes your perspective on like your priorities and things like that, for sure. And I'm only 28, so I feel like pretty young to have kids, but I don't know. It's awesome. I always used to think it was so corny, where like, your life will never be the same and it's going to change everything for you. And I'm like, well, no, it won't. And then I had kids and I'm like, oh, you guys were right.
Yeah, for the better though. It's
always, yeah, definitely for the better.
Me too. I was afraid, like, oh man, am I going to be able to get sleep? Am I going to be grumpy all the time? Nah, man, I take naps. I have kids. I start, you know, it makes, you know, just more responsible, but yeah. Man, is it so much? It's so much fun.
It's the best. Yeah, it really is the best. And like I said, I like the perspective that having kids has given me is the best thing I think that's ever happened to me, honestly.
Yeah, man.
Is your wife done fighting, or is she still fighting?
I think she's going to be done. Right. I don't want to say never, because my wife, like, she might decide, okay, I'm coming back and training. She loves training. I know she'll never be done training.
Right.
She loves jiu-jitsu. I think she'll definitely get back into maybe competing in some jiu-jitsu, but fighting, I think it'd be really hard. You know, my one daughter, my oldest has special needs, and my wife actually went through a CNA program to be her full-time caretaker. So I think she's kind of taken over that role, and she kills it. She's awesome at it. I just don't think she can commit to fighting like she wants to. Like, oh, she's not a person that'll, like, she could take some regional fights and beat girls on the regional scene for sure. But if she wants to fight again, I know her, and it would be like, I want to get back to the UFC. And I don't feel like she thinks she can commit the time to do that. So I don't think she'll fight again.
What does CNA stand for? I'm not familiar with that.
Certified Nurse Assistant.
Oh, wow. Okay. She took like real medical courses.
Yeah.
The time, I guess you'd have to put in, if you have more work than would be expected at home, the time you'd have to commit to full-time fighting, and the, you know, the possibility of being laid up with injuries is probably a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like it would be tough. And she knows what it takes to get to the highest level too. Like, sometimes ignorance is bliss, and you think you're working really hard. Like, she knows what it would take to get there, and I don't think she thinks she can do that.
That's also an advantage though. Like, if she knows, like, if she didn't know, she might go, shit, I could just do a little bit of this and get there. But she knows, like, no, this is like a real process. Like, I know that would be a huge hill to climb. Maybe it's an advantage too that she knows it, so she's not going to feel like I'm this close when she knows it would be a lot of work.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like in our sport, it's so high risk. Like, you don't want to be like half-assed in it and then get in there, because you'll know, like, when you hit the top step to get in the cage, you'd be like, man, I didn't do what I needed to do to be successful. And that's like maybe the worst feeling you can have, going into a fist fight with somebody. So I think she's happy though. I don't think she like regrets like having kids or anything like that. I think she's excited about where we're at. And like I said, I think she'll get back to training. She loves training. It's good for her. It's good for her mental health and physical health and everything. I just think the time it would take to get back to where she wants in fighting, she doesn't, it's not really doable.
Does she work your corner or no?
No, she doesn't. She'll be out here for my fights. She was in my corner for my first five fights as a pro, and all my amateur fights. And then when I moved out to Colorado, there was like a shift there because she was pregnant, and it was just a lot of stress. And she still is a coach. Like, she still goes over, watches film with me, comes to all my sparring sessions, kind of helps me through all that stuff, and cooks all my meals. But just in the corner, it's so high emotions. And when you really, you know how it is, like, when it's my boys, I'm like, you, it's hard to put on the coach's hat sometimes because the emotions, but with your wife or somebody that you're that close with, it's really hard. So I think it's been better.
Well, I was going to ask you if that's hard, because Matt's wife has done some fighting, and I wonder, is it hard to watch your wife fight? Like, you have to separate, like, be a coach and be a husband. Is it harder to do?
Honestly, when Bobby was fighting, I felt like it was easier for me to corner, because I wasn't as emotional, because I could put on the coach's hat, right? I didn't have to be, there was no time for me to be husband and partner and friend. It was like, okay, this is a job. We got to go to work. And then afterwards I could be husband. But during, like, if I feel like one fight I wasn't in her corner and it was really, it was like really tough. But when I'm in her corner, I'm kind of locked in on the job.
You're looking at the business end of it as opposed to watching it. Yeah, I imagine that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's like when a tragedy happens, people can kind of go through doing what they have to do, and then a month later, they feel awful.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like it's definitely similar to that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, because I know you're going to be getting out of here soon. You got a, you know, you got a fight coming up. You and the wifey, what do you want? What are you streaming? Anything you want? Me and my wife are watching Yellowstone. I highly
recommend. Yeah.
We just got done with season two. Holy fuck, Jimmy. I wish you watched. I'm going to spoil shit for you. But wow. I love Rip. Rip is a motherfucker. What a badass. But anyway.
You're like Rip, bro. You are Rip. You're the New York Rip, bro.
You like Rip? You know, you watch the show? You watch?
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah, I watched all of it. I love it. It's a great
Rip's
show.
Rip's a badass, that Rip. I like Rip.
You know? I bet you would. Like I said, bro, you're the New York Rip.
I'm too short and bald. He's a good looking cowboy. I don't think I could really do the – I'd be like my cousin Vinny in that thing. I wouldn't – I'd be on a fucking – I'd put me on like a little mule. But what a show, huh? You watch it?
Yeah. Yeah, really good show. Me and my wife, big fans of Yellowstone. We're right now. What are we streaming right now? I think she started Prison Break, an old show.
Yeah, she used to like that too. That's interesting. They keep bringing that up again. That's fun.
How old is that show? Because I've heard of it.
It's probably 15 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. They brought it back. They brought it back. The fucking thing.
Yeah. You know? So we're streaming that and. Yeah, there's a we do a lot of watching. Oh, and Miss Rachel. I got a toddler, so we stream Miss Rachel quite a bit.
What is it called? What show?
It's called Miss Rachel. It's like a little kid show.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. That's on in my house more than anything, bro. Like you said, nothing can be yours. Miss Rachel's in my house more than anything.
After one of my fights, I went to a show, and I don't know if you ever heard of this thing. It was on back in the day called Yo Gabba Gabba. I went to the city, and I still have some of the fucking scars, and I had all stitches on my face, and I'm in there, Yo Gabba Gabba, yeah. I'm in there fucking, little kids are looking at me like I'm a monster. Anyway, it's fun.
Yeah. Cody, look, it was great getting to know you. Good luck on Saturday, man, and come back and talk to us again against Rodolfo Vieira. It's a great fight this Saturday. I think you guys are third up. I could be incorrect. I'll have to go back. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think we're the third fight on the main card.
That's great. Good visibility too. ESPN. But, you know, it's always better to, I think, be on. Everyone likes the pay-per-views, but I always think that more people can see you on these cards.
Shit. Yeah, for sure. Definitely on the come up, especially. You know, you want people to kind of get behind you.
Well, good luck on Saturday, man. It was great talking to you, and we'll talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate you.
All right, buddy. Anytime. Thank you, Cody. Take care, bro.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Ah, perfect timing. Tom Arnold is in the waiting room. I haven't seen Tom in a while.
Dude. Now, he was a stand-up before he met Roseanne, right?
You know, I don't know if he did stand-up. It's funny. I do not know if he did stand-up or not.
Well, we're going to find out.
I should know that because I really like him.
Yeah, man. Shit.
Very honest and interesting guy.
I'm leaving.
Did he do stand-up? I probably... Oh, yeah, I've done stand-up with him. I just don't know when he started. It was in Montreal. We've done it together on festivals. Yeah, I Tom does do, but I didn't know if he started as a stand-up. We'll ask.
Oh, man, this guy don't age, though. He looks
great. He looks great.
He looks like he's in the first True Lies right there.
What's up, Tom?
He's blushing.
I was in the first True Lies, damn it.
I know you were. I seen it as a I was there as a kid. Hey, you look great. First of all, nice to meet you, Tom.
I do. Thank you. It's great to meet you too. I'm a big fan of both of you guys. You know, Jim there, that's my assistant Sasha. She's like, she's a comedian. She's
hello.
Like, please tell Jim Norton that I love him.
Oh,
thank you very much. You're very sweet. Appreciate it.
Very hard. Look at that. I got the Carrie Lake thing on where you can't really tell. It makes me look younger somehow.
Oh, you look great. No, you look good. You've come along very well, which is nice.
How about your nails?
My nails. My daughter's 7. We got our nails.
Wow.
That's great.
They're expensive, so I'm not getting them off. They're the gels, which I didn't know what they were. But I'm not. They cost a lot. I'm keeping them until they come off. Like, it's an investment now.
Can you take them off or no?
You can. It's a little bit of work, and I'm told. And so it'll be once a month we do dad daughter night, and we do dad son nights. It seems like a lot, but and then we do whatever she wants to do. So far, I've never said yes, I thought they're regular nails like the ones she puts on me, but it takes a lot of work. You have to be in like a ultraviolet light and then a back. And I thought they were just drying my nails so I could reach in my pocket and pay them because that makes sense. Yeah. But no, they'll be here for a little bit.
I did the same thing when my daughters were a little younger. I did it on my feet, but you know, I figured I could cover it up. And I think you could take it off with the nail polish remover. That don't come off easy at all. And I teach jujitsu, so sure, mine were out there for everybody to see too. And
What's bad is when you're older. I'm 64. My kids are 10 and 7. And you'll forget. Like, she'll put makeup on me in a room and have a thing in my hair. And I'll think, oh, that's cute. And then I'll go about my day and forget. And then I'll be outside talking to the neighbor. And they're looking at me like, what the? Well, they don't say anything either. They don't acknowledge. You got it. You know, they probably think show business. Who knows?
So yeah, I mean, in show business, you can kind of do anything weird, and people are like, oh, that's just what those people do. There's nothing you're going to do to shock people when they know. And Matt was asking before, Tom, I know you do stand-up, but did you start as a stand-up?
I did. I started as a stand-up a little over 40 years ago. My whole goal, I grew up in Ottumwa, Iowa. It's a small town. I worked on the kill floor of a meatpacking plant for 3 years to save money to get to the University of Iowa, which only because I knew they had a stage there. And I thought, I'll get on the student union wheel room stage once, and then I'll be on Letterman in like 6 months, which is crazy. But I just wanted, my goal was to be, when I grew up, we had a single dad. And the only time we ever heard him really laugh hard was when there was a Bob Hope special on. And I remember thinking, whatever it is that Bob Hope does, that's what I'm going to do, because I want my dad to laugh that hard at me. And one of the first things that happened when I moved to Hollywood is a Bob Hope special, like Roseanne and I did, a Bob Hope special. And he called my dad, he signed all his books, he did all the stuff. And then I thought, okay, that's it. That was my call. I really also thought if I get on TV one time, the people in my hometown would like me. And it turns out that's absolutely not true.
No.
It's absolutely not true.
No, they dislike you more almost, like, and I mean by any of us, because they didn't like me before, and now I'm on TV, and they're like, oh, we didn't like you before, and we hate that you're doing well.
Yeah, there are those people. Yeah, I have 4 ex-wives. I know those people that turn on you.
are you friends with them?
With my ex-wives?
Yeah, I stay friends with most of my exes except for wife, girlfriend, not ex-wives, but only one I don't talk to.
Well, I'm not. People always say, "Are you still friends with Roseanne?" I go, "Well, if we could be friends, we'd be freaking married, man."
Yeah.
No, it's been my experience that I've always also been grateful when they got moved on with their life. They got, like, my first 3 wives immediately met guys, got married, and had babies. Like, I was like, okay, that's done, because my thinking, just the way I am, I'm like, well, it got really terrible, but there's still a chance I'll go back. So hopefully they'll get together with somebody. And Roseanne got together with a bodyguard I'd hired, great big guy, and I'd sent him to Mossad bodyguard school. So when he and her started being a couple, I had to pretend a little bit, like, you know, I'm going to have to pretend I'm going to throw down. This guy is with my woman. But I will say this. He was scared of me. Like, he thought, and I'll tell you the real long story short, I got a call for the National Choir. They're like, Roseanne and Ben are holding hands in Sardinia, walking around. And I was supposed to meet Roseanne in Sardinia, wait to spend the summer a couple weeks later. And I said to my brother, let's get on a plane. We got to see this. So we fly over there and we land in Rome. And they're like, you better get a bodyguard because it's Wild West up there. I go, okay. So I got one off-duty cop, a captain, the Rome Police Department. He has a gun. Okay, we land in Sardinia, and our car gets surrounded by three cars and guys with Uzis. And they're like, she wants to see you now. So I was like, okay, we're going to do this thing. And we go up and have this beautiful place right over the ocean, beautiful. And she's up there with Ben. And the guy from the choir, of course, followed and has all the pictures. But I said to her, are you and Ben fucking, you know? And she wouldn't make eye contact. She's like, no. But I knew they were. And I felt such a sense of relief. But then there's Ben, dumbass Ben, standing there. So I had to do a, you know, come back. And I did scare him for a second. But I also would have been killed by the. But it was a relief because I was like, oh, now she has moved on. She's got somebody. I don't have to do the back and forth. And then so the guy from Rome, the cop from Rome's like, you know, in our society, women do not do that to men. They don't, we could do something. Like, they're very machismo. I go, yeah. I don't have to do anything to. I go, what would you do? Well, we do something to him. When he landed in Rome to go back to America, we plant drugs on him, and he'd be in prison the rest of his life. And I was like, no. Then I would get back with her. Well, and my brother goes, well, what will you do for $10,000? And pulled out $10,000. And so when they landed on the way back to Rome, and there's pictures, the eight cops swarmed him and tackled him and gave a full body cavity search, and they missed their plane. Because I said, don't touch her. Don't touch her. And so that was satisfying in a horrible way.
That's wild. Man, holy shit. That's something out of True Lies. That's like a fucking, that's a wild story.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you something.
Yes.
When your agent called you to be like, look, remember that show you know that movie you did 30 years ago?
Yeah.
Is it a weird phone call? Like, remember True Lies that we did 29 years ago, which, by the way, was awesome at the time. I seen that.
Yeah.
That was one of those back. I don't feel we have a lot of those. That big budget. Wow. Arnold fucking spy movie with him, Jamie Lee Curtis, you being the best friend. That was a great movie.
And it was fun. Yeah. They let Jim Cameron, who's done some things, who directed and wrote it. Yeah. You know, it was great because I got to be the hero. Was Arnold Schwarzenegger, as always, but he suddenly had flaws. And my character, who's very flawed, was so excited that he was down to my level, which is, you know, which is a real friendship. When a guy, you know, before we start filming, Jim Cameron's like, hey, would you like Arnold to come over to your house and trade with you in your unused home gym? And I'm like, yeah, I think I would like the greatest bodybuilder of all time to come to my home and work out with me. And so he showed up at 6 a.m. and I answered the door. And I'm like, shit, Arnold, I forgot you were coming. Everyone I've ever met is here. Our guys, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's at my house. And so we trained. And then that afternoon, Jim Cameron called me and said, what time do you want Arnold back tomorrow? And I said, I don't want him back tomorrow. He said, why? I said, number one, I could say I worked out with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Number two, the pressure of the working out with this guy. This guy knows more about the human body than any human. I mean, that's arguably true. And he looks at you while you're working out with him. I mean, he does your body, and he has to give you one compliment. He does this to everybody. He's like, Tom, you have a fantastic right shin. And then he starts in on your trouble spots because he wants to help. I got a lot of trouble spots, and I didn't want him to help. So, but as we did the movie, it was supposed to be a three-month movie. It ended up being a seven-month movie. Jim Cameron's movies did. And every night, our trailers were next to each other. Arnold had a semi-truck retrofitted into a gym, a huge semi. So he would go left to his gym, and I'd go right to Ben and Jerry's. That's not even a joke. Like, we'd be bait and you'd go our ways, and he'd be like, you want to work out? No. But then one night after the movie, we were our fourth or fifth month, it started getting to Arnold. And he's like, we get out after work, and I'm like, hey, enjoy your workout. He's like, no, give me two pints of rum raisin. And from that point on, he started eating ice cream with me, and he gained weight, and he got, like, depressed. And I thought, this is a true friendship. There's no way he was pulling me up to his unbelief.
That's right.
I could pull this fucker down, man. That was a good feeling.
That's funny. One of the best bodybuilders in history, and after a couple of months with you, he's like, fuck lifting weights. I'm going to eat ice cream until I'm depressed. Dude, and I didn't know this, Tom. They said you had a stroke in 2022. I had no idea. Are you all right?
I am all right. I had a mini stroke. I was giving the kids a bath, and I always do. It's hard to get them in the bathtub. It's harder to get them out of the bathtub. And you know, we're trying to time crunch at night, and so I do a thing where I go in there, I turn my face around, and I count to 10 at the bathroom door. Whoever jumps up first wins.
Yeah.
And this time when I went back around, it felt like a curtain came down in my right eye. Like I could see it come down, and I was blind. And so I kind of, you know, I got the kids all situated and I got them in bed. And half of my vision came back, the other half, before wow. I went to bed. And I was, the next day I was supposed to go to Alaska to film something. And I actually thought, you know what, I'll deal with this in Alaska. You know, it's probably a floater or whatever. I got on Google, of course. And then I thought, well, you know, that's, I'll stop by my doctor on the way. And they do these tests and they shoot some dye in you and you could go through all the veins in your eyeballs. And they're like, you had a stroke. I'm like, oh, you got to be shitting me. That you don't want to hear that. And they're like, you got to go into UCLA for a 24-hour stroke protocol. And as I was sitting there, I was laying there that you go in through the emergency room. I'm laying there and they have a list of 10 strokes. 1 through 10, each one getting worse. And they say, what number did you have? And I said, I had number 1, thank God. Because, you know, you get to number 7 and you are like, it's just totally fucked. It's like being on the Hot Ones. You think you're going to eat all the hot sauce, but to get to number 7, you're like, fuck. I am fucked.
What's the worst, like a brainstem stroke?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, there's the one where you die. There's the one where you cannot move any part of your body.
Yeah.
This stroke has and I should know the exact name, but it's not, I found out afterwards, they put me on blood thinners and I also, then I was like, I got to lose some weight. And I was like, there's no, you know, during COVID and with the kids and the homeschool, when the kids are the only people that see you with your shirt off, it's not a lot of pressure.
Right.
Like, oh, I got to do it. And so I started working with this guy, Charles, D'Angelo, who I met at Arnold's too. Anytime you meet somebody, get a lot of bodybuilder dudes there, usually with gold lame, short that said oiled up. And I said, yeah, I'm ready. He'd been asked me, you want to start working with me? I go, okay, I'm ready. And I'd pictured it like I'm not comfortable sweating in public. Like if I could do my private workouts or whatever. And he does a Zoom, he's out of St. Louis, every 2 weeks. And he tells you exactly what to eat, exactly when to eat it, and how much cardio to do. And before 6 months, I'd lost 80 pounds. I did not believe it was possible.
Wow.
I said to him, it's not possible. I knew I was filming with Arnold in the summer, True Lies. And I said, well, it'd be nice to be to my original True Lies weight. And, you know, I got below that. But it's, you know, something I'm also maintaining. You know, I do an hour of cardio a day, which is good for my head and other things. And so, yeah, that's, you know, I'm very lucky, but I also start hearing from people who are like, yeah, I had a stroke too. And I had a stroke. I'm like people I did not know that had strokes that, you know, I'm friends with or whatever. And so it was scary. But fortunately I thought, well, there's something I could proactively do to make sure this doesn't get worse. And when you go to the hospital, they check your brain, everything to see if exactly how bad that stroke was. And if it's a setup for a bigger one and knock on wood, it wasn't. So, but you know, I live my life like one day at a time, you know, I'm sober at the gym. Yep. And I think that's the best, like, is this going to be the day? And again, my kids are so young. What if today was the last day? I better think about that. I'm trying to make this a great day so they remember this day. So, you know.
Mm.
If today was I'm sorry, Mr. Arnold. If today was the last day and it's an open casket, what would you do with your hands? Would you have them do something with your hands or leave it like that?
Would you leave it on your chest for everybody to see?
My hands like this?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Well, you know, I'm Jewish, so we get it. There's not a lot of time before you're
No, you get 10 minutes. Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to be cremated. Maybe with this, like have a party or something. But I also feel like when you're dead, you're dead. And people are always like, well, won't you regret this when you're dead? No, I'll be dead. No.
Oh.
I'll be dead. But yeah, they would have to, if I had an open casket, which I don't recommend, you know, they would, I would, they put a lot of makeup to make you look like you're, you know, I know they did with my dad. I'm like, what happened?
Not to get too deep. When you're dead, you're dead. There's no old man with a beard in the sky or anything.
There's no old man, but there is something. And I feel it. And people talk about heaven. I think this is heaven right now where we are. This is what we got to make the best of. It could be hell and it could be heaven. It's really up to us. You know, circumstances are horrible and sometimes, but there's no guarantee. I'm not first of all, Jews don't believe in hell, which is great.
Sure.
I don't believe there's a old man in the sky. But I do feel there's something that I've talked to that I've said, you better get your shit together. There's a voice that, you know, you have a chance if you do this. And it's always been a positive force in the universe. And I'm well aware I did not create this everything. I didn't create that dog. I spent $200 getting it at Legoland. So I tried to win it. But you know, there's a lot. I think when you have kids too, you look at them like, oh yeah, there's something much bigger than me.
Did you come out of it with a lot of gratitude when you realized, like, okay, it was a very small stroke. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to live. Do you look at that like, fuck, man, I should really, I'm very grateful that happened, or I'm grateful like that I'm still here and I can do things that I might not have thought of doing?
Yeah. I mean, I've been very grateful. And being somebody in recovery who wasn't always in recovery, you know, I've had some moments, you know. I was 19 years sober. I got sober in 1989. And I was cocky about it. And I said to guys I sponsored, because they were opioid heroin guys. I go, yeah, that wasn't my thing. I am alcohol, cocaine. And I wrecked my motorcycle out of PCH. And I broke my back. And I remember, I was very grateful. There, a woman had slammed on her brakes in front of me, and I had plenty of time. I was back. And so I was like, this is okay. There's no right lane. And so I started pumping my brakes, and it wasn't working. I looked down, there's oil everywhere. I'm like, well, shit, here we go. And you guys probably know this. Everything slows down. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to turn my bike sideways. I had a big victory vision, let it go under her car. I'm going to fly up over the car and land on my feet in front. And I just about did. But I clipped her hood, and I was on my back. And all, you know, you do that thing where you're like, okay, my legs work. I'm fine. And I started to get up and pick up my mirror, and so I could tell I'd broken something here. So that the ambulance came, I could hear the ambulance coming, and the guy gets there and he's like, are you in pain? I said, yeah. And he goes, not anymore. And gave me a shot of fentanyl. And I remember thinking, oh no, that's what I need.
Yeah.
That's the thing I've been looking for my whole life. And so a couple of years later, I was getting my 20th year cake, and I realized I'm still on pain medication. I am not sober. I'm going to eat this cake. But then I'm going to start over.
Okay.
You know, yeah. So
you were taking it the whole time. How long was that from the accident to when you realized?
About a year and a half.
Wow. And did you convince yourself?
They had to do a take, because I'd taken so much. You know how it is. You're having 60 pills a day. And they tried to step me down, and I ended up in a coma for 3 weeks. Because something burst inside of me. Which is a great way to lose weight, I have to say, too, because when you come to, they're like, this is what you look like. And then the unfortunate thing was I hurt myself so bad I had a wound, this big open wound that they had a wound vac on like they do, you know, in combat. And they had to let it heal. And then I looked at it. I'm like, okay, I could deal with that. And then they said, one more thing you have. They showed me I had a colostomy. I'm like, fuck. I did that to myself. And they're like, yeah, you're lucky because in 90 days you'd get this thing taken down, they call it. I'm like, oh, how many minutes is that till?
Yeah.
A couple things I learned. I have a heart camp, Camp Del Corazon for kids with heart defects and heart disease, the biggest one in America. And I started paying attention. There's kids that have had colostomies their whole life, and they're swimming and killing it. And these kids I'm like, I can't be such a pussy about it. And also, they come out with some new, it was like Tupperware where you, bump. I mean, it was kind of, but I did get it at 90 days. I went in at about 60 days, the doctor, and he's like, I was bullshitting you when I said 90 days because I thought you'd be too depressed. And I go, when can I get it? He goes, it showed me a picture of this wound, which every day a nurse had to come and debride, which means cut the dead skin off. He goes, when it looks like this, and it was sort of purple, and I said, I want to give me that picture. And I took it home, and I put it on my mirror, and every day I looked at that to get this wound. And literally at 90 days, I went in and had this sealed up, which I had no love handles, like first time. Like,
wow.
And then they took the colostomy down. Unfortunately, I got MRSA, and my temperature started going up every day. And they're like, okay, we got bad news. We have to open you back up.
Jesus.
I go, what about the colostomy? They're like, yeah, no, we don't need to do that. I go, whatever you got to do. So it was a period of 3 or 4 years where I had 7 more surgeries because of this. I had the mesh put in. I had the mesh removed. I had this, that. I had to work on my abs, start from scratch. And so that was all a product of, you know, my addiction. And so, you know, I'm definitely aware of that.
Wow. Yeah. Pain medication scares me for that reason. And whenever I get one, I've taken like half pills and thrown the rest out. Like, I'm not a martyr if I'm in pain, but yeah, that's really scary. And you're so honest that it bothered you that you were getting a cake and you wanted to be truthful about what you felt the time was. That's why I think you're a really honest guy, Tom.
It was a big obvious moment. The people I have the ton of respect for, there's people that have been sober a long time and then they come back and it's so humbling to go, I'm starting at day one. I personally, speak for myself, I got a lot of my self-esteem from being a part of the community and having a lot of time
sober. Yeah.
And you realize how much you get. And then to start over, but when people do that, like I go to meetings of guys like my sponsor's got 4 years. He got arrested one time when he was 18. He never did drugs, which is like, well, how does that even work? But when these people come in and they share, you know, how vulnerable they are, you also see how fucked up they are. You know, that starting from day one, I mean, you know, it's very helpful to me selfishly to go, yeah, I'm that guy. I'm this guy. And it's a very powerful thing.
Tom, sorry, go ahead.
I was say, speaking of being selfish, you're sober for how long? Next time I visit you, I'm not going to bring over a jar of weed. I'm sorry, man. You have
that okay, listen, if I could have just smoked weed, I would still be smoking weed. But I remember trying it. I didn't even try pot till I was out of high school because we drank. And then the stoners did weed. In my town, you know, there's this and there's that. And then when I did try it, I'm like, yeah, I don't like that. But and then I tried coke. And my sister was the biggest drug dealer in America. There's a documentary series about her called The Queen of Meth. My little sister was the biggest drug dealer in America. It's a good series. I forget Discovery Plus, but it's good. It goes through our whole childhood. And people are always like, were you embarrassed that your sister was a drug dealer? And I say, not when I was doing drugs, I wasn't. It was handy. Because she'd come over, she had a big leather purse with her gun and her drugs in it. And the other, there were some kids in my family, and we'd be at the Thanksgiving table, and she'd kind of do that, like towards the garage. We'd all get up, go out in the garage, get in a circle, you know, and the Thanksgiving can be cold in Iowa, but get a circle and she'd say, what do you want? And I'd say, what do you got? And she'd say, everything. And I'd say, that's what I want. I want everything.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. Yeah. Tom, what are you promoting? Before we wrap up, I want to promote what you're promoting.
Tonight, when is this? Is this today?
Today, yeah.
Okay, tonight I'm on True Lies, the CBS series. They wrote a great role for me. That is, you know, answers a lot of questions about my character in the original. There's people playing my character, Omar Miller, who's great, playing Arnold and Jamie Lee's, but they did a great job. Jim Cameron produced it. So that's tonight. And then May 13th, Arnold has his sort of True Lies series coming out, FUBAR, on Netflix. And I did something there, too. So those are the things.
Cool. Tom, you're really one of the most interesting guys I know. You're always truthful and always go in depth. So I really appreciate it. What is your assistant's name?
Sasha Boggs. Sasha Boggs.
Tell Sasha thank you very much. It's always whenever you get a nice compliment from another comic, it always is very, very nice. So tell her I appreciate it.
My son wants to know if I get some UFC Prime. You know, they had a UFC special. You know, I mean, he's very into this Prime drink. So he's like, he talked to those guys from the UFC because they had a Prime, which is hydration or energy. And he wants to get the UFC version. So if you know anybody, let me know and I'll pay for it.
We'll talk to Adam. I'll ask him. I don't know what UFC Prime is. I've never drank it, but we'll definitely ask. Adam as soon as we get
cool.
off.
Kids love it because it's cool. Like Prime is clout. Having these bottles, it's crazy with these kids.
We'll get you some clout. with the kids. Nice to meet you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Good talking to you. And I'm happy you're well, man. You look great.
Thank you. Big fans of both of you guys. Thank you.
All right. It's mutual. Take care, pal. Talk to you soon.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Yeah, he's great. Tom Arnold is such a fucking fun, open guy to talk to. He's one of my favorite people. He talks for hours about interesting shit. Like, I think he's terrific. So check him out tonight. And don't forget to watch the fight this Saturday night. Let me get the right time. I think it's 4:30 for the prelims and 7 for the main card. But I'm an idiot. I remembered it. ESPN2, ESPN Plus. And the main card is on ESPN Plus, 7 p.m. Song versus Ricky Simone.
That's a wild fight, bro.
It's a great fight, yeah. And I will talk to you this weekend, Matt.
Hey, Jimmy, man, I'll be traveling, but I'll talk to you.
Have a safe flight.
I'm going to be off on next week's show, the first show on Monday, but I'll be back for our second show.
And yes, please come see me tonight, 7 p.m. at the Fat Black Pussycat. If it's not sold out, all tickets have been selling out here in New York.
And if you're in Manchester, England, 29th and 30th, for the love of MMA, myself, St. Pierre, Anderson Silva, Vito Belfort, Quentin Jackson, Kenny Florian.
Wow. Everyone. A lot of real legends.
Bunch of OGs. You like that?
That's great, buddy.
Thank you, Jimmy. Goodbye, Matt, everybody.
Have a safe flight. Talk to you soon, bud.
Bye, Jimmy.
Bye, guys.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.